is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for October 29th, 2020. Today's edition is also a production of the Sunlight Media Collective, who documents and presents issues affecting Indigenous people from Wabanaki perspectives, highlighting the intersection between environmental justice and tribal sovereignty. Less than 3 months before a referendum question would have been on the ballot aiming to reverse state agency approval of the so-called New England Clean Energy Connect, or CMP corridor, Central Maine Power's parent company, Avangrid, succeeded in blocking it in the courts. This election day, however, opponents are collecting signatures again on a reworded citizens' initiative aimed toward bringing it to voters the following election cycle. While those who promote and profit from hydropower tout it as a clean energy, the facts bear out differently in terms of environmental impacts, including greenhouse gas emissions and methylmercury contamination, and on the health and rights of the Indigenous people whose communities are affected by dam construction and subsequent flooding. The proposed CMP corridor, an 145-mile transmission line slated to bring electricity from Hydro-Québec through Maine to Massachusetts, has received stiff opposition from local Maine communities and the Penobscot Nation. On Wednesday, October 28th, the Natural Resources Council of Maine, Sierra Club Maine, and the Appalachian Mountain Club filed a lawsuit challenging the Army Corps of Engineers for an inadequate environmental assessment of the project and for refusing to require a full environmental impact statement, EIS. A public groundswell in the state, as well as Congressman Jared Golden and the Penobscot Nation, all have requested an EIS be performed, but the Corps declined this past summer. A document obtained by the groups in the suit under the Freedom of Information Act revealed that the Army Corps and the U.S. Department of Energy have identified major issues with the CMP corridor, including the company's claims about the proposal's impact on the climate. Members of First Nations in Canada have been campaigning heavily these past months through in-person tours and other means to express their opposition to transmission corridor projects in the Northeast United States that would increase the impacts of hydropower development on their communities. Today we hear from an educational web event organized by Northeast Mega Dam Resistance Alliance and Sierra Club Maine, and a press conference aiming to bring the voices of First Nations people to the Conference of Northeastern Governors and Eastern Canadian Premiers last month. Meg Sheehan of Northeast Mega Dam Resistance Alliance introduces Innu Labrador Land Protector Amy Norman.
The dams trap sediment that would otherwise flow to the ocean, thereby negatively impacting fisheries and undermining the ocean's ability to store carbon. Dams are a safety hazard to those living downstream. The flooding and flow alterations of the river systems makes it impossible for Indigenous communities and people who have followed traditional fishing, hunting, and gathering livelihoods and trapping over millennia. It prevents them from being able to do this and causes food insecurity, as you will hear from Amy Norman. Canadian megadams poison the environment and wild foods with methylmercury. Ironically, Canada is one of the most water-rich countries in the world, but many of the Indigenous communities living near these dams have no clean water due to the degraded nature of the river systems. The hydroelectricity that Hydro-Québec and Nalcor Energy, its sister corporation in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, embody Canada's legacy of colonialism, state-sponsored violence against people and nature, racism, and discrimination. Under these policies, most of Hydro-Québec's vast hydropower empire has been built on the ancestral lands of Aboriginal people without the consent of the people who use those lands for millennia. They were built without environmental impact statements, and the largest dams that were built back then in the 1970s are still in use today and part of the export supply that Hydro-Québec is trying to sell as clean, green, and renewable. It is anything but. It's a climate and humanitarian disaster. Just to give you a sense of the scale of what we're talking about, the vast areas that I'm talking about are in subarctic regions of northeast Canada. You can see the distances on the left-hand side. You can see James Bay. That's where one of Hydro-Québec's largest dams is located. That was built in the 1970s. These transmission corridors go 1,200 miles down to Boston and New York. Over to the right, further east, you can see the Churchill Falls dam that was built also in the 1970s. That is a massive dam that has a reservoir that's the size of the country of Ireland. Hydro-Québec operates a system of 63 megadams located throughout the country. One of them is not shown on this map, but it's located on the border of Quebec and Labrador. That's, again, the Upper Churchill Dam, and that's relevant because I'll be talking about that in a few minutes. So first of all, we have the Innu Nation of Labrador. In Maine, they submitted comments to the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. They are the group that are impacted by the Upper Churchill Falls Dam. It's the 10th largest hydroelectric generating facility in the world. That's the one that has a reservoir the size of Ireland. Amy Norman, our speaker here tonight, lives downstream where the second dam has been built, Muskrat Falls. The Innu of Labrador have submitted a declaration from their tribal chief describing the fact that 1/6 of Hydro-Québec's electricity supply that it's exporting to the U.S. today is clean and green, is unlawfully located on their lands. The Penobscot Tribe of Maine joined them in July in requesting that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers require an environmental impact statement for the New England Clean Energy Connect corridor, citing two reasons. First was the impact on the Maine environment, which harms Penobscot lands and fisheries, but also because of the second reason being the significant impacts on the Innu Nation in Labrador. Three First Nations from Quebec in August of 2020 wrote to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. That would be the Wemotashi of Akademek First Nation, the Innu First Nation of Pessimi, and the Anishinaabek First Nation of Pico Johns. So these folks are located, as I mentioned, on the north shore of the St. Lawrence River. They're all based in Quebec. They have urgently requested that the Army Corps deny the New England Clean Energy Connect application for the Clean Water Act permit. They talk in their submittals about how their communities were dispossessed of their lands by the government of Quebec and Hydro-Québec with the consent of the government of Canada. And they outline how there are 21 production structures, some 10,000 kilometers or 3,800 square miles of reservoirs, tens of thousands of kilometers of transmission and distribution lines and new roads that were illegally installed on their traditional territories. These infrastructures are still operated by Hydro-Québec in violation of rights recognized by the Constitutional Act of 1982 and the 1996 ruling of the Supreme Court of Canada. So they are saying that they will not stand by in silence while Hydro-Québec financially benefits from their heritage. And 33 of the 63 production facilities of Hydro-Québec are built on their traditional lands without consultation and without compensation. In other words, Hydro-Québec is trying to sell to the United States stolen goods. As far as the profits that will stem from the New England Clean Energy Connect, Hydro-Québec will make nearly $500 million in the first year selling electricity via the CMP in Maine. It will make $12.4 billion over 20 years. There's a similar corridor going through New York, and so you could double that number. Avangrid, the parent of CMP, will make $60 million a year in profits over 20 years for a total of $2.9 billion to operate CMP. So thank you, and I will turn it over to Amy Norman. She will be talking to us about her experience as an Indigenous woman and community member in Labrador that was who's impacted by that second dam on the Churchill or Grand River. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Amy Norman. I'm an Inuk woman born and raised in Happy Valley, Goose Bay, Labrador. So way to the northeast. I'm going to be chatting with you a bit about what my community has been through downstream of these kind of giant mega dams and kind of what that holds for the future. I'm Inuk, so my family and I are Inuit, the circumpolar indigenous people. We're from Labrador. I was born and raised here. My mom's family is from Newfoundland. My dad's side of the family is from Northwest River and Maine in Nunatsiavut. I've been with a group called the Labrador Land Protectors since about 2016. That was kind of when the resistance movement to this mega dam really kind of boiled over. And the reason for that was this large study that was done in partnership between the Nunatsiavut government, so that's our Inuit self-government, with Harvard University, their School of Public Health. And they looked at the issue of methyl mercury contamination caused by this dam. Methyl mercury, it's a harmful neurotoxin, and it can cause what's also known as Minamata disease. So it can cause all kinds of issues from numbness in your hands and feet, developmental disorders in children, memory issues, issues with hearing and speech. So it's really, really this horrific thing if you have too much methyl mercury exposure. And so mercury naturally occurs in all vegetation. And when the vegetation is submerged in water, that's when it converts to the harmful methyl mercury form. And this is particularly harmful to us as Inuit because our traditional diet, it's very fatty, very rich in fat. And methyl mercury, like as a molecule, it builds and builds and builds, so bioaccumulates in fat. So you might not have, very high levels in the water, but as, the plankton and the tiny critters get eaten by the fish, and then the larger fish eat those fish, and the seals eat those fish, and we eat those seals, and we're getting all of that mercury from like every level, to the point where the levels are up to 10 million times higher in fish and marine mammals like seals than the water that they live in. Anyway, we're often called seal people. That's who we are. We have for millennia been, hunters, gatherers, but especially on the coast of Labrador, we really rely on seal for everything. It's not just a source of like rich, healthy food. It gets all of our vitamins and minerals. Like we don't have that much vegetation in the Arctic, but we can still get like all of our vitamin C from seal liver and stuff like that, right? And it's our clothing. We use the oil for our lamps. Like it's long been, this source of everything. It's essential to who we are. And to have something in our backyard that's, contaminating this, it's severing, our ties to not only rich, healthy food, but also to who we are as a people, because it is such a spiritually important connection. We still rely on hunting and fishing and harvesting. Here's a picture of me and one of my nephews with some pretty teeny fish, but it was a great day. We caught other ones later. here in the north, it's food prices are so like astronomically ridiculously high. Like it's hard to kind of understand unless you like live it, but you can't rely on the grocery store because it's so expensive, and it's not as healthy, it's not as good, it's usually like prepackaged kind of stuff. It's not as good as what we can hunt and what we can find on the land. So it's really devastating to have these food webs poisoned like this. Like I was saying, it's not just the nutritional side. It's really that cultural connection, who you are, as a people. It's your practices, your traditions. It's everything. It's all, interconnected. So it's all very important stuff. before the Muskrat Falls Dam, before the reservoir was impounded, Inuit in my area of Lake Melville, it was already 2 to 2.5 times higher than the average Canadian in terms of mercury levels. This is because of decades of mercury buildup from the Churchill Falls Reservoir. So that was the older dam in the 70s that Meg was referencing, reservoir the size of Ireland. So even though it's 300 kilometers upstream from us, we already start with a baseline higher than, the average Canadian. Muskrat Falls is estimated to further increase our mercury levels by 1,500%, 1,500. It's just so absurd. But even more ridiculous is the fact that they're still, trying to push full steam ahead on this third dam on the same river. You know, this is only going to increase these levels even more. This is going to push Inuit into a critically dangerous level of mercury exposure. It is really, really scary living in the shadow of that. I've seen elders cry. It's so heartbreaking. It's people you rely on. They're usually the shoulder to cry on, and then for them to be just it's so upsetting. I want to talk a bit about the overcriminalization of land and water protectors. At the height of the protests, we'll say back in 2016, there was dozens and dozens of people charged and arrested. So over the past 4 years, I've counted over 70. It's kind of hard to keep track, to be honest. I've personally been charged and arrested twice. We've had some of our elders sent to maximum security facilities over 1,000 kilometers from home, including when they sent Inuit grandmothers to maximum security men's prisons in Newfoundland. It just breaks my heart because, it's just injustice after injustice after injustice to send a grandmother to a maximum security men's prison, a 3-hour flight away from their home. We've also seen a young woman violently arrested in the middle of the night. That was right at the beginning of all of this. The cop who, violently arrested her he later received an award, a humanitarian award. Sometimes words just don't come to me because I get so frustrated. That's one of them. And we're still being dragged through the courts. We're still being, targeted for just trying to protect our homelands from destruction. My charges personally were dropped, so I'm very grateful for that. But I still have to help pay off my legal fees. And, good lawyers are really expensive. So there's a link there, and we'll put it in the chat too. If you have any kind of spare change, you can pass along to our fundraiser page and help get some of these legal fees down. It's really eaten up a lot of our lives, and it shouldn't have. It shouldn't, you shouldn't have to kind of put your life on hold for 4 years just to try and save your home. Some other impacts on our communities. The government of Newfoundland and Labrador, they only consulted with one of the three different Indigenous groups in the area. So the Innu Nation, they had their consultations with, but the Inuit of Nunatsiavut as well as Nunatuavut have never given a free, prior, and informed consent. This is something that's required by the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. And, because they kind of picked the provincial government picked one group to talk to and not the other two, it sows a lot of distrust between people. And it's kind of festering and creating these hard feelings between Indigenous groups when, that's not serving anyone. We need to work together to try and, help each other out kind of thing. And meanwhile, we have these massive mega dams in our backyard, these really long, sorry, my words are failing me a little bit here. These really long transmission corridors, and they're bypassing all of these communities on the south coast of Labrador. They're going so close but they don't connect to them at all. And meanwhile, these communities are still relying on dirty diesel energy. They're using diesel generators. It doesn't make any sense to me. Nothing about this project makes any sense. Nothing about hydro makes any sense. The final point I wanted to bring up, just because it's happening right now, the Indonesian hosts their annual elders gathering every year at Gull Island. So Gull Island is the proposed site for this third dam that they want to do. And Innu from all over Natasinan journey here. It's super important culturally. It's a wonderful time. I love seeing my friends there. The pictures there are lovely. So that's happening right now as we speak on Gull Island. And that's where they want to put the dam. All of these issues that we've seen at Churchill Falls and Muskrat Falls, it's only going to get worse. It's only going to be further magnified by this proposed dam at Gull Island. And the one at Gull Island is like on a whole other scale. You know, Muskrat Falls is massive, but it's only 824 megawatts. The one that they're proposing is 2250 megawatts. So 2.7 times bigger, 2.7 times more awful. It's just this absurd idea that they want to even think about this after how devastating and destructive and like divisive this whole thing has been. And it's tricky too, because right now our former premier, because we just got a new one like a week ago. The former premier of Newfoundland and Labrador has gone on the record recently, just November of 2019, saying the biggest roadblock for the project has been getting electricity through Quebec. He says discussions are still very early, but he believes Quebec will begin to work with Newfoundland and Labrador towards making the project feasible. There's a very long history with the Churchill Falls Dam, but basically when they're talking about working together to make the project feasible, they're talking about building Gull Island, shipping the power down through Quebec and into New England. That's what's really on the line. And that's where you come in. That's why we do these kind of discussions, to really talk about what's happening on the other end of things and what are the impacts on the other end of these transmission lines.
You are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. Both Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis and Chairwoman Melissa Ferretti at Herring Pond Wampanoag spoke out against the CMP corridor at a press conference during the Conference of Northeastern Governors and Eastern Canadian Premiers last month.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Chief Kirk Francis. I've been the elected chief at Penobscot Indian Nation here in the state of Maine for about 15 years. Proud members of the Wabanaki Confederacy here in Maine. And thank you for the opportunity to be able to talk today on this important issue. As you saw in the video, the Penobscot Nation started to become very concerned with these projects as the more we're involved in them, particularly around understanding and not being so caught up in what was going on locally, but trying to understand the A to Z impacts of a project like this. What happens at the source? And what happens at the end result and everything in between. We have requested, as the video indicated, an environmental impact study from the Army Corps of Engineers on the project, and that was abruptly denied. We have since started to demand consultation under the Corps' Indian consultation policy, and awaiting to be heard on that. The impacts of projects like this are obviously not only concerning, they just should not be happening in this day and age. And just a couple of examples of people we've talked to in brothers and sisters in Canada, in the Innu Nation in Labrador, for example, significantly impacted and would be impacted further in their territory by a project such as this. There's been no permission sought, no consultations had, and all this damage done within their territory. It's just had a huge cultural impact on them, and further perpetrates the effect of just simply another territorial removal and done in a much different way. These are subsistence and, in some cases, ceremonial pieces of their territory that are being impacted. You know, the Churchill Falls generating station, as an example, before that area was flooded, it provided subsistence to those people. in an area where they actually buried their dead. And to hear stories of watching the erosion and the bones floating away and those things are extremely sad and obviously, again, cannot happen. Reservoirs were created in their territory as well, encompassing over 2,500 square miles. So there are costs well beyond money to these projects, and entire people's way of life and culture are impacted, not to mention the fish and wildlife impacts, the habitat, all of those things. And before you know it, when you're starting to talk about burial grounds and all those other things, you're basically having entire cultural identity stripped from people. And as was mentioned in the video, there's some pretty serious words to call that, and genocide is certainly one of them. And I will just close by saying that the Penobscot Nation is really no stranger to the impacts when powers side with industrial interests over the interests of people. We've watched as industry has polluted our waters to a point where even today we're under a fish consumption rule. Pregnant women, for example, are advised not to consume any fish that come out of the river. And for riverine people with such a cultural tie to our namesake river, again, this is not just about fishing. It's about protecting the cultural identity of a people, making sure that our children can grow up to be who they are, and that's Penobscot. So we stand in solidarity with all of you in condemning this project. We call on the state of Maine to pull away from this project, let the people have a voice on this project, and also consult with the inherent sovereign nations in this state as well as in Canada, to not only seek their input, but seek their permission within their own territory to be destroyed. And so so I want to thank you all again for being here and for allowing me to participate. It's been an honor to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Francis. Next is Chairlady Melissa Ferretti of the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe of Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Wani Motalpin. Natasuis, Melissa Ferretti, Nutomas, Iquan Amakwapakwit, Wampanak, Kanatai Patuxet. What I said in my own language is good morning. My name is Melissa Ferretti. I am from the Herring Pond Wampanoag of Plymouth. In my work as tribal chairwoman, I am inspired by the many Indigenous activists, educators, and leaders who are bringing broader public attention to environmental justice issues. The homeland of tribal nations in the US are among those communities that are most likely to be targeted for projects that are disastrous for the environment and that have multiple destructive impacts on Indigenous people's lives. Tar sands, pipelines, transmission corridors, waste dumping, etc. The Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe knows this because we have been at the ground zero of colonial resource extraction for over 400 years. As I know very well, Indigenous people in New England are often overlooked or ignored with respect to matters of energy and resource development. Yet, at the same time, as a tribe whose ancestral homeland, along with the forests, the fish, and other wildlife in Plymouth, was used by the pilgrims to serve their interests as colonists. We know that we and our history as a tribe are directly connected to the decisions that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts makes about projects such as this transmission corridor proposed by Central Maine Power Company and Hydro-Quebec. We know that any environmental justice and threats to community well-being faced by the Penobscot and Innu Nation, or faced by any other Indigenous communities whose homelands and sacred places are ravaged by dams, flooding, transmission corridors, or pipelines, are environmental injustices and threats to the well-being that we may also face in the future. For our tribe, and for all tribal nations, our self-determination as people depends on fulfilling our responsibility to protect our youth, elders, and all of our relatives, human and non-human. As you may know, the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe has issued a statement of solidarity, and we are proud to stand with our brothers and sisters of the Penobscot, Innu Nations, and all Indigenous communities in asserting our right to protect ourselves and our relations against environmental destruction.
And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio with the Sunlight Media Collective.